Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Lou Register. Join me, well, not me. I'm not in this episode at all, which is why I'm doing the introduction. Join Hardy now, will you not? As he speaks about something, and I don't remember what it was. But it was interesting, and he mentioned going out to dinner with his mom. And I remember telling me he was going to do that. So that's neat, when real life shows up in art. I'm done.
Hello, my friends. Every year I like to play I Remember April on the shofar. And I don't do a very good job, but oh, it brings me joy. And being with you today brings me joy. Let me tell you a story.
Oh, I would like some Sauvignon Blanc, please.
All right, would the monkey's paw be all right?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, the monkey's paw, or we also have the cakewalk. Now, the cakewalk has notes of caramel and candy apple and carpet.
I'm sorry. I just...
Just bring my mother a glass of white wine, please.
All right, sir. And what would you like?
Do you have Blanton's?
Yes, we have a Cabernet Merlot.
No. Blanton's.
Blanton's?
No, not Blanton's. Blanton's. The whiskey. Blanton apostrophe S.
Well, Blanton's.
Yes, Blanton's. I was out to dinner the other day with my mother and some others, and a couple of things happened. One is the waiter, in his eagerness to be, I don't know, helpful or to upsell, was giving my mother much too much information. My mother, who just wants a glass of white wine, I think also feels oppressed by the fact that she has to call it by name or call out the variety or something like that. So then he added another dimension, which is to know the brand of the wine that she wanted. She don't care. And that's all right. I mean, some people do. Oh, they care deeply. And he assumed she did. So his technique was not working very well on my mother. They weren't communicating well because he was giving her too much information. And then another thing happened. Another dimension of human communication. I said the name of a whiskey. Like I should have said John Wick, right? I said, you ever seen John Wick? I said, no. But anyway, so I asked for this, and my accent, I guess it said Blanton's. It sounds like Blanton's. B-L-E-N-D-S. He was hearing, but I was saying, I can't spell. Go to spell. You know what I'm saying. Oh, yes. So we had a miscommunication. Oh, and it worked out all right. We all got what we wanted, finally. But before that, there was some terrible miscommunication. That's why I want to talk to you today about the fear of death. Oh, not just that. Also, the fear of other things. I was learning how to say, and I'm not going to say it because I haven't practiced, where is the bathroom in Japan? Japanese, not where's the bathroom in Japan. Sometimes I'll just go into a local restaurant and I'll say, excuse me, where's the bathroom in Japan? Just out of curiosity. Because every restaurant has a duplicate restaurant on the other side of the world, a sort of doppelganger, an Asian doppelganger. So if you go to into your, let's say it's 1970s in South Florida and you're in Lums, well, they have one in Tokyo, I imagine, too, at the same time, but it's so opposite, and it's called Mulls or something. Everything is different, and yet everything the same. Worldwide, human beings are similar, yet different. And I want to speak to you today about those similarities and differences. We have different, what they call, euphemisms for the bathroom. See, I just said bathroom, because we can't really agree on what it's called. Now, clearly, if I'm at a restaurant and I ask for the bathroom, there is no bath in the bathroom. If I was in Japan, they probably would show me where the actual bath was. But there's no bathing in there unless I have my, you know, I've got my Ken doll and I give him a little bath in the toilet every once in a while. So to us, it's the bathroom. But it's really the toilet, the lavatory. There's all sorts of words. Washroom, they say that in Japanese too. They'd say, where do I wash my hands? Because they don't want to acknowledge that we might be going in there to poop. Oh my goodness. It does not diminish you as a human being because you poop. It's perfectly natural, but we don't want to acknowledge it. Why? I think it's fear of death. Fear of death? How can that be, Hardy? Call it the washroom. What are you washing? Why are you washing your hands? Maybe they have poop on them. There you go. So it's not much of a euphemism. And why would we fear having poop on our hands? Disease. Well, just being disgusted, probably. But that disgust comes from a fear of disease. And the fear of disease comes from a fear of dying. So the whole reason that you got to go to the bathroom is because you're afraid of death. Well, yeah, and I got to go. Well, true. There's not much you can do. I mean, you can try to hold it. But that, there, right there, you would be defying nature and you might, I don't know, really hurt yourself. They say if you hold your pee too long, your bladder may explode, and then you'd urine mist would come out of your, like, your ears and your eyes and all. People would go, what's going on? And, oh, no! I guess you'd feel it first. You feel a lot of things that go wrong with you. Oh, this human vessel. Is it a vessel? What do they mean by vessel? Whenever, that just occurred to me. I've heard that your body is a vessel. But up to this exact moment, I've always imagined it being, for some reason, a vase. I don't know why. I guess because then you can always put the ashes in it, and then it's sort of like, I don't know, meta or ironic or whatever word you want to use. But I just had the idea that a vessel was also like a ship. Your body is like a ship. Your outside skin is like a hull. And then you got, I don't know, a rudder. Do you? Do you have a propeller somewhere on you? I do not know. The other day, Lou came up to me and he said, Hardy, I feel like a puppet. And I said, why do you feel like a puppet, Lou? He said, well, I have a hole in my bottom. Also, my mouth moves a lot. Words come out of it, but I don't always feel as if I am the source of those words. Sometimes they pour out of me as if it was a bodily function. Something that, can I go to the speech room? I need to talk a lot. And have little, be just like the bathroom. And there'd be stalls. And you can go in there and close the door and talk. That's what I'm doing, essentially. That's what I'm doing, essentially. I'm in my soundproof booth, which is really a public restroom. I don't let on. But I'm sitting in a public restroom. There are people that are, you can't hear them because of how I don't have the mic on very loudly. But they're screaming, shut up, I'm trying to do my business. But I'm sitting there, it's my little office, and I speak to you. And it's just like that. It's just like it's a natural thing. I have to speak. I have to communicate. And when the waiter was communicating, it was not in a natural fashion. It was not as if we were over at somebody's house and you said, can I have a glass of wine? And they go, we got white or red. I'll just take whatever you have, friend. The hospitality is so wonderful. This was a business situation, and the waiter did not feel comfortable and felt as if he was reading from a script and was not really communicating, was not really looking for a response from us other than to name the product that we wanted. And so there was no real communication. I just felt as if he were marking territory or something, if you were going to equate it to a bodily function. Instead of, I don't know, I don't think you can do your bodily functions with poetically. I guess you could. You're studying Zen and you say, I'm doing everything with mindfulness. You know, I know it started with just with calligraphy, but now I'm taking it into the restroom with me and I'm thinking, I'm going to do this mindfully. A lot of times I would sit there and read. I keep a copy of The Master and Margarita, and I just willy-nilly open it up and read some. But I've stopped doing that. Or you take your phone in. That's worse. Don't take your phone into the toilet with you because it could go right down there, and that happens to a lot of people. They drop their phone in the toilet. So the lesson should be, you don't need it. Go in there and do that mindfully. I was getting spiritual lessons the other day, and my teacher said that to me. He said, you should leave here and urinate. And he didn't say it. He said it more succinctly than that, in just two terse words. And he was right. I was to go off and do that mindfully. And I'm going to do everything mindfully like that. because we don't know how much time we have. I gotta concentrate on the moment. I need to think ahead and plan ahead, but I can't get wed to it.
You know not thou for whom the bell tolls. It tolls. Do not ask. That's it. For whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee.
Well, that's not possible, because if it was tolling for me, I would be dead, and if I was dead, I could not hear it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes. So I'm not the one laying in the chapel or something with the bell ringing. That's not me yet, but it will be.
Oh, yes, I see your point. Sorry to bother you.
That's all right. I am alive right now. I won't always be. None of us will always be. And everybody who ever died suddenly by having a piano drop on their head was probably thinking about something they needed to do. I gotta pick up the dry cleaning. And the minute that piano touched the top of their head, the dry cleaning became unimportant.
Oh, the future we imagine won't always get here. And the one we are scared of may not always get here. Oh, it's the moment. That's why I like being with you in this little confined space. This hour. I'm pretty sure I'll get to the end of the hour, but beyond that, there is no guarantee. Now, I need to plan because I fear death, and that stays with me always. And so, I like to plan because I want to know where my next meal is coming from. I got to plan a little bit. I want to take care of things with the knowledge that I am merely bailing out a boat. That there's no fixing the hole in the bottom of this boat, that it's just about bailing, and that I might as well get used to and maybe even enjoy a little bit bailing it out.
How do you enjoy that? How do you enjoy bailing about? How do you enjoy doing something that's futile, Hardy? Well, I'm glad you tuned in today. Hello, my friends. This is Hardy White. Today we are going to make a custom bailing can. Now, we all have to bail out our sinking boat. We are all on one, and it takes on water, and we have to continually and without fail take out water in one can at a time, like that with our bailing can. But a lot of people have these ordinary dull cans that they do it with. That's no fun. So today we're going to learn how to make our own can. We're going to decorate it. Really, we're going to take one we've bought. We're going to go to the store and we're going to get some coffee, some Yuban. I don't know, your Yuban. It's Yuban. That means Yule banquet. It's a contraction. And you get some of that coffee and then dump the coffee out. Don't do that. No, make coffee. Make a lot of coffee for people. And then dump it out after it's already brewed. People go, that's far too much coffee. I only needed a little. Go, great. That's so, I hate to waste it, but I now have this can and we're going to glue things on it. It's going to be in water a lot, so there's a couple things that are going to happen. It's going to rust, and whatever we glue on it, it's going to come off, and that's not going to stop us. You say, why would you put on felt on something, Hardy, that you're going to dip in water? Come on. Make a new one. Nothing lasts forever. What do you want me to make it out of? Marble? Nothing marmoreal? It's nothing is marmoreal? Isn't that the right word? But I can't make it out of marble. And even if I did, you really want a big, it makes it heavier that way too. And you'd say it would last a while. Yes, it would. But even then, marble monuments crumble. I've seen this at the cemetery. They fall apart. You know, here lies John Lurk. And that's it. And you say, where's the rest of it? Because it really doesn't matter anymore. Nobody who ever knew John is alive. He's just a memory. He's not even a memory. No, pardon me. He's just a memory. He's not really. But he has affected things, you know? No one has to remember domino number 258 to know that when domino 258 hit domino 259, that was an event that was absolutely necessary for the future that we now have. So even though no one remembers those dominoes in the middle, they are important. Your life is important and it's meaningless at the same time. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, this is the time of year. In the Jewish tradition where they blow the shofar like I did, they do not play I Remember April. But I was just thinking, gosh, it's fall. I remember April. Maybe it's a person. I don't know. But it's hard to play. It only kind of plays one note. It's like a bugle. And I should be able, I'm not a very good, horn player at all. And this is a literal horn. It was on a creature. And I'm sorry for that. And I apologize to it when I put my mouth to it. But I hope, in a way, I hope some of my remains are converted into an instrument. You know, at the top of my show, there is a type of music that is called shape note singing. And the shape note singing comes from a hymnal called Sacred Harp. Now, that sacred harp isn't just a harp that's sacred, like the harp that Harpo plays. Now, he does play a harp, and it might be sacred to him. Who knows? I do not know. Maybe it's made of the bones of his ancestors. But the sacred harp that is being referenced here is the human rib cage, the breast of the human being. It makes a wonderful noise. It can call out joy, or it can call out pain. Oh, pain. The pain was on your end. Say, that doesn't sound painful. It was to you, was it not? But it's a beautiful thing, the human body, whether it's alive or dead. And we are fascinated with it when it's gone, with its skulls. It's just because this is funny that you're talking about these things, Hardy. Listen, it's between Rosh Hashanah and Halloween is a crazy time, is it not? It is the fall. It is the season when we go out to the fields and we take our scythe of relief. And we relieve the crops of their life and bring them in and harvest them. And it's really creepy. And that's why always pictured death as some fella in a cloak out there doing his farming. I don't know if people dress like that when they farm. Oh, it's fantastic that you're wearing a cloak while you're picking your wheat, basically, is what you're doing. But I guess what death is doing is harvesting souls. Now, what are those souls going to be used for? Are they going to be processed? Are they going to be put in machines and stamped into crackers? Possibly. I don't know. I don't like the idea of harvesting souls like that. Oh, I hope we all stay here. All the things that we're talking and all our movements and everything, I think it all stays in this wonderful sphere of craziness, of electricity and rocks that is this universe. Something else. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, Lou, you are a puppet. And what is the being that has its hand up your bottom, moving your mouth? That is life itself. It is a 4 billion-year-old creature on this planet, life. It's a thing. It's all connected. It's all about that drive, that weird thing, that prime directive to keep going, to make more, but with no promise of seeing it. You're made into little Moseses. You lead the march to a destination at which you will never arrive. And it seems so futile. And life marches on. And you are caught in this whirlwind, in this stream. You are born into it without any choice. And you speak words and ideas that you did not bring with you. You found them here, like something left in an alley, like an old toaster oven or some sort of stick that used to be part of something. Is it a broom handle? I know. It was a grabby stick. It was a grabby stick for pulling stuff off of high shelves. But the high shelves are gone, and so I'll have to repurpose this stick. And what can I make this stick into? What can I take this tool that was used by my predecessors? I must bring something to it, and when I'm gone, someone will take it, and they will put it back in the alley, and there will be something added to it or something broken off from it, and someone else will find it, and this will continue. Oh, this is the soup that we're swimming in. We're all swimming in a sort of soup, aren't we? And I'm sitting on a carrot cube. I know I am. I just feel I am because that's the first thing that popped into my head. I'm not even sure I like soups that have big chunks of cubed carrots in them. That's when you know it's from a factory. That's the difference between a factory. You go to someone's house, and if they have carrot in the soup at all, let's say it's the rare, sometimes, occasionally, catch somebody putting slices of carrot in their matzo ball soup, which is fine. Everybody do whatever they want. But there'll be slices. And even vegetable soup, you see that. But then if you buy those frozen vegetables, you'll notice that the carrots are in cube forms. Why is that? What's the problem? Because they have to be uniform. And when you slice a carrot, a carrot is conical.
Not comical. It is comical, too. Look at people like Captain Kangaroo, who made use of carrots for comedic purposes. A conical orange vegetable. One of the few, if only, orange vegetables. Then you say, well, orange bell peppers. Excuse me. But when they are packaged like that, they all have to be the same, do they not? But they can't possibly be the same. But you don't feel bad when you slice your own carrot. You know that some of the slices are going to be small and some are going to be big. And who knows which are the good slices? And who knows what's a small slice? When you get to the middle, what's a small slice and what's a big slice? You have the heap paradox comes into play. And you can't figure out which it is, big or small, unless you see it in comparison to something else. Hi, I'm Hardy White. What are you listening to? The radio or your computer or something like that. Do you not know that? Didn't you know that? That's all right. Sometimes things come into our head, we don't know where we heard them. This has happened to you. You've been out at a restaurant or something, or you're walking in the mall, or you're loitering outside a movie theater. And you hear Rosemary Clooney. You make me feel so young, like that. Aww. And so you're not aware you're hearing it. You listen to the song. You're not consciously thinking that's Rosemary Clooney. But then you get in your car and you go, you make me feel so young. Like that, it got in there, didn't it? It soaked in there. Think about how many other things just soak into your brain like that and get you to say them. Oh, you gotta be. Are you a puppet? There's nobody working you, like I said. You're being worked by a biological soup. You're being worked by a history. You're being worked by the souls of ancestors, some of whom are single cell organisms with little hairs sticking off of them. Oh, fine little hairs. You fine. They're so fine. You're fine. You're fine. Oh, you are fine. My mother used to say, the hair on your head. Some people say, oh, I'm finer than a hair on a frog or something like that, implying, I don't know, that the frog, the hair is so fine you can't even see it. Well, my mother used to say that about, I'd say, oh, I'm bald, Ma. And she'd go, no, your hair's just very fine. I go, well, it's clear and has no physical substance, if that's what you mean by fine. But I don't think that's what's going on, that it's just fine. But it is fine in the other sense, because I don't mind. You know, keeping my hair, that's a lot to ask. I don't want eternal life, do I? I'll take eternal something, but life I'm kind of familiar with now, and that seems like a bit much. If I'm going to get all you can eat of something, I want to make sure it's all I can eat of something I enjoy. So we say, would you like eternal cotton candy? Not so much. Not really. I don't think so. But I could probably eat, what could I eat forever, every day, forever? There's probably a few foods. I mean, I guess you get sick of anything, any kind of routine. A friend of mine had been in prison said, prison, you wouldn't think so, but prison gets very, very old very quickly. And I said, oh, wow, I didn't expect that. Because you see, the movies makes it look, you know, interesting. He said, no, it's not, you don't want to be there. I thought, okay, great, now I've got something else to worry about. So I'll fear that, but that's the same as, I'm just going to put that in my fear of death box. It's stupid to make separate ones. I'll put that in there, put that, all my fears just go in that one. That's probably what I'm mainly afraid of. Every time I get in front of groups of people, not every time, stop lying. I didn't lie intentionally. It's just one of those things you say. It's a figure of speech. Try to be accurate. Two times I was in front of people, and I get them to write down, or I ask them what their biggest fear in life is. Now, you'd think the number one would be death. But when you ask people, a lot of them will say some version of being an outcast, some version of being alone, some version of being completely shunned. Isn't that interesting?
of being denied any comparison, being denied love, attention, acknowledgement. It's on a par with death for a lot of people. I take all human complaints seriously. See, people are whining. That isn't for me to say, really. I don't think so, because I'm not giving out money or anything like that. I'm just smiling, being nice to people. So I acknowledge and I understand that, goodness, life is hard. Emotional pain, physical pain. How do we get anything done at all? I don't understand how we get anything done at all. It's like people complain about the mail or airline schedules. Think for 2 seconds, how is this even happening? It's an amazing feat of organization, of consistency, of people showing up every day. Have you ever tried to like put on a play or something and get people to come to rehearsals? Imagine trying to move all these parcels all across the world and then trying to get people to show up to do these jobs. It's amazing that it gets done. It's amazing that planes even fly, much less land on schedule. People looking at their watch to the minute. Holy gosh, I've never arrived. Anything that I've ever piloted, which is mainly a GM product or a Volkswagen or something, I've never gotten anywhere exactly the minute I thought I would. It's really difficult. Things happen. And so I understand that the world is unexpected all the time. And depending on people is lovely. But, you know, gosh, don't act surprised. And they just watch. I think either have more experience or look at more art and you will understand more things about people. And then your expectations might change a little bit. Bless them. They are complicated. Ooh. Honest people lie. Liars are honest sometimes. Compassionate people can be cruel. Cruel people can be compassionate. You never know when they're going to do it. They don't do it necessarily in any order. People don't necessarily grow up. Sometimes they grow down. Sometimes they change depending on things that have happened to them, and those things are unpredictable. Do you ever have friends in one stage of your life? Your lives drift. They go off and do other things. Oh, listen to this. This is my impression of someone clearing their throat in the distance. Pardon me. That's uncanny, isn't it? I'm pressing a button. It's just not connected to anything. Say we're cough button. First of all, I don't believe. I think it's that's cheating. I want you to hear everything, even if my no, I don't want you to. It's all. Let me talk about character for a moment. Kabuki theater. Japanese kabuki theater. Have you ever seen this? Almost, I think it's like 400 years old as an art form. When I speak of this, I will please understand that this is my understanding of things that I have read. It is not necessarily true. It's my understanding and the conclusions that I have come to and the inspiration that I have gained through my understanding of something, not its truth necessarily. I am not a smart person and somebody could have been lying to me. So, Kabuki Theater, they've been doing a lot of the same plays for a long time. There are characters in these plays that go back 400 years. There are also lineages of actors who take the name of their predecessor. And so they'd be like Hardy White 8. So everybody who played that part was named Hardy White. So it's the same role, played by an actor with the same name. And the time begins to blur. And the difference between 400 years ago and today seems to be no different. It's the same character. It's the same play. It's the same words said in the same way by a person with the same name. Kabuki Theater. You wake up in the morning and you walk out of the door and your name is Christine or Robert. Names that other people have had. Names that other people still have. And you walk out that door looking like people that have walked out that door before. Maybe your family's lived there for a few generations. And there you are, the spitting image of your grandparent, walking out that door with the same name. Not necessarily going to the same job, but you say the same thing sometimes. Oh, I've done that. I suddenly can't think of any expressions that my grandparents had. I know they have, but I can't think. I wish hell, my grandfather never said hell's bells. It was yelled at me by an elderly person one time, but let's say it's that. Say, hell's bells! Someone says that to you, you start saying it. Grandpa said it. Like that. So, it's weird. It's weird being a ghost. It's weird being alive and also being the echo of another time. It's weird being yourself and nobody at all.
You're scaring me.
No, it should be absolutely liberating.
Why?
Well, what are we? But mist, but ideas, but little phantoms, wonderful little ghosts, jolly little ghosts who have nothing to fear. The thing they fear is the wonderful swimming forwardness of the lake, the river that they're in, the lake, the flowing lake. Well, the lake could be flowing into a hole in the ground. There's a vertical rivers, you know. Some rivers drain down into underground caverns. That's still like a river. It's just moving perpendicular to most rivers. But still, let's say it's a river, proper river, going up to down. Up to down. Well, that is sort of how it goes. Most rivers do flow up to down. Some flow uphill. Which ones? You know, you can start listing them in the comments. Thank you. And then we'll add them to the wiki page. There's always exceptions, aren't there?
No.
That's an exception right there. Isn't it?
No.
I don't know. I think that anytime you get a good idea, there's probably something about it that is fails to really describe what you want to, fails to really, there are words fail to convey exactly what I'm feeling all the time. I don't understand my feeling. And then I assign the wrong words to them. You ever do that? Oh, I do that all the time, Hardy. I do that. We do that. Here's just an example. Have you ever been, your physical condition affecting your mood? That's the easiest one. So, oh, I'm so, my blood sugar was way down. That's why I was so mean and cranky and stuff like that. You're having reactions that we usually associate with something else, and they just boil down to this, your nervous system. Things happening to you. It's confusing. I'm always confused, everybody. Aren't you? I'm confused by what I'm feeling. All I have, really, are my senses, which are very imperfect. And as I age, they're really starting to get imperfect. And then all I have is kind of my reason. And my reason, oh gosh, I don't know if you've been to school recently. My reason works okay, but not great. And the thing I depend mainly on is experience, feeling. I'm kind of feeling things. I'm thinking through them, but mostly I'm feeling them. I know I am. This whole life, it's just an experience. However, it leaves me very confused. I feel buffeted from one emotion to the other, and I can't find the origin of them, the cause. I can't always be responsible for stopping the sources of pain or confusion. And I try my best. And I love the feeling when I'm with others. The burden is lifted a little bit. It feels a little bit more like, perhaps I belong with others. Perhaps that's part of it. Maybe that burden of responsibility for being alive, I look around to the others and I get a little better picture, a little better sense of the big picture, and I feel a weight is lifted a bit from me, and I don't feel as guilty. Because, you know, I don't know if you're dying right now, and I hope you're not, but everybody does. And because we're not together, I can speak to you like this. Because if you're sick and you're dying right now, okay, you say, oh, I've been fighting this, I don't know, but I think maybe this is it and everything like that. Bless you so much. But don't you feel like maybe on some level, you're being made to feel guilty, as if you have to fight, or this disease or something is your fault, or like there's something unnatural about this thing that is happening to you that has happened to millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and everything. I mean, I don't want to get sick, and I understand, but gosh, we make it seem like it's evil or something to be. It's natural. It's hard, you know. The one thing you don't want to have is guilt. You know, you can be scared. That's, you know, appropriate. But feeling bad, like you're, you know, don't have guilt for it. Oh, my gosh. It's nothing you did. Even if it is something you did. What do you want? The body is so fragile. All I was doing is having a good time. I'm sorry. And you know what? I did manage to squeeze some joy in there. And these moments we have, the one I'm in right now, so alive, the moment I am in right now, gosh, there's almost feels like there's no past or future for the moment I'm in with you right now. We can make it as vibrant and as alive as we possibly can. You want to think big thoughts right now? You want to stick, I'm not going to go into work yet, Hardy. Don't sit here with me in the car. Let's have one of those conversations that we haven't had since we were teenagers about the vastness of the universe, about our smallness, about all our how our dreams are crazy and we're going to do them anyway, about how honest we are about our confusion, how lost we are. Oh, the most important thing is what we have right now. And I know that we should go do these thankless tasks and we'll get to them. But this being together, put your hands up. Let's do that thing where you feel electricity from each other's fingertips. Be alive and experience it together. Surprise for me. That's what it's all about. I love it. That's why I like to travel. When I just mope around the house, a lot of times it becomes so samey. I get sucked into my stale memories and I go out. Oh, and I go out. I travel to someplace I've never been. And I feel that wonderful combination of being totally lost and totally lost in a good way. Excited, surprised by what I'm seeing. I didn't expect to see that because I don't know where I am. So everything I see is unexpected. And I'm paying more attention because my body's sort of afraid. Now, it's a wonderful feeling to be like afraid but not terrified, just sort of on guard. Like when you're on vacation, you're something to travel. You know, you've never been to that town. You're not really sure, but your senses are working overtime. I'm taking more in, so I almost feel safer because I'm alert. Nobody's going to sneak up on me. It's not possible. My head keeps swiveling around like an owl. There's no way they're going to come up behind me. I'm fully aware. I'm in the moment. I'm living. And maybe it's driven on some level by fear. But I'm getting this surprise. And maybe my eagerness to connect with you right now, sitting in this car with you about to go into work, maybe that eagerness is driven by fear a little bit. But it's also driven by this attraction to joy, this attraction to these feelings, these electric feelings, these magical feelings of being surprised and delighted. And they seem to happen in the spaces. They seem to happen in little places we have to sneak away for them sometimes. Moments are tiny. Moments aren't vast. Days are vast. Months are vast. Months are like big arenas. Large arenas where they have basketball games and they have concerts by bands that are strangely popular. Right? Large. That's not what moments are. Those things are grand and historic. Moments happen in them. But they happen in the tiny spaces in the seats. They happen right there in the seat. They happen in confined spaces. Sometimes they're off happening in the restroom. Ooh, I don't know, like me, sitting in there. That's where I am right now. I'm in an arena. I'm in the bathroom. I'm in a bathroom stall in an arena. That's it. Yes, and there's a game going on, and I'm speaking to you privately. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Yeah, not you. Sorry, sir. I'm end up speaking to someone here in the stall with me. All right. Yeah, well, they're not with me. I'm recording a radio show. I beg your pardon? Yeah, I'm recording a radio show, so a lot of those noises that you're making over there are going to be played in, get this, New York City. They're going to hear your gas. And you, New Jersey, New York, you're hearing my gas right now. You're hearing the emanations of my soul. My spirit is a sort of colon, and the memories go in there. And as I tuck those memories away, they release things. They release chemicals. And these chemicals have very little substance. They're kind of a mist. And they come out, and you can't really even see them. You can only sense them. They're called words. You know, I thought, see, you think, oh, you're equating speech to intestinal gas. A bit. Maybe I am. You know, think about it. Because there is the breath itself is what's coming out. I'm breathing, and the breathing is making sounds. And if you know how to interpret the sounds, that's a very important if, then you can gain ideas and things like that. And gain some information, let's put it that way. But when there's no information in it, what's the expression? Hot air. That's a load of hot air. Hot air. It's still hot air, even if it's conveying information. So people can listen. One person can listen. Y'all have different ears. Yes, yeah, some lobes are attached, some are not. Not what I meant, but that's true. You all have different ears. Some are pointy, some are rounded. This is true. This is all the things you're about to yell are true. But I don't mean literally. You all have different ears. You all hear me differently. Because you all run it through the filter of your experience and memories and expectations. So when you hear my voice, it comes with all sorts of things, the way the character does. That's why we can never fully expect that what we're hearing from people is anything but sort of lines in a play. You know, I'm giving you what I think is true, but really it'll only have meaning if it connects to something that you know about. Otherwise, it's just, I'm just breathing on you, and that's unpleasant. And so for those of you, when I start running, I go, oh boy, I love that Harlem Globetrotters cartoon back in the day with Scatman Crothers as Meadowlark Lemon. And some of you, oh, you people exactly, my contemporaries, are seeing that. And a lot of others are thinking, you might as well have just made nose-blowing sounds because I don't understand what you're saying. Just the way the waiter was giving my mom information that didn't make any sense, especially when saying the names of the wineries. You're like, Monkey's Paw. She's a Monkey's Paw. She doesn't know that's the name of a winery. She asked for a glass of white wine, and you start talking about short stories or stuff you plays you did in high school. It's cakewalk. What are you talking about, right? My mom's not. Now you're talking about going to a fair or something. She's thinking about cake. So she doesn't know the names of all these wineries, so the information is pointless to her. And I feel like that's the case with me. I'm speaking not just a language, but I'm also speaking the language of a waiter who is coming to your table and saying certain things that he's been told to say in a way, or rather that he thinks he should say. If you've ever listened to public radio when they're trying to raise funds, and it's really particular to public radio, not this beautiful station, which does something very different, when they ask for help and assistance, sometimes they disguise it, but sometimes they ask for it directly at different times of the year. But you know, your public radio stations will have on people from the community. Somebody's a real estate agent or a lawyer or somebody else or a coach. And they'll come on, they'll speak in a way that is not necessarily, they're saying certain talking points that have been told. If you've ever done that and volunteered, they'll have things written down, you know, say this, hit these talking points. But they also know to sort of self-censor. They know the language of that audience, that way of speaking. You know, do you understand, have you heard like the way people deliver news stories now, especially features? Okay, a lot of this is a podcast manner of speaking. It very much sounds like very casual speech or fiction, or and I wonder where it came from. And, you know, you wonder where previous conventions come from, a matter of speaking. So, you know, back in the day when everyone spoke like this on the radio and everything. I mean, I know, like, you know, the transatlantic accent and stuff like that. And I understand that. But, I mean, you know, how did they go about? They sort of start in one space and then other people copy other people and it increases exponentially. So you don't even know why you're speaking that way or delivering that way. You just know that's the way we do it. That's the way we deliver these podcasts. That's our cadence. That's how we pattern our speech. And who knows where it started? High school speech and debate competitions. I know they have a very stylized way of doing things, and I can't imagine that people don't take those with them into professions. So imagine that. Imagine as one coach in the Midwest or something starts saying, speak it like this, and it catches on, and everybody starts doing it. Oh, yes. It's like recipes. Recipes aren't the bread. They're just a bunch of words. They're just a bunch of ideas. It's not bread until you take it and add tangible things to it. My words are just words, and my friendship is just friendship and imaginary, and the things I say to help you are just mist until you add something to them, until you take them and make them real and tangible in your life, and then there's something. That's I don't have to sell you anything. I don't have to sell you anything because I can just give you the instructions on how to make it. Oh, that's dangerous. People would rather make the thing and sell it to you than give you the instructions and show you how to make it the rest of your life. Nobody wants to give you the secret recipe. The secret recipe. Where did they get it? Did they steal it? How did they get it? And who gave them permission to make it secret? Maybe it's supposed to be free to all of us. Information. Secret recipe. You know where that's the worst? I don't mind so much for chicken. Secret recipe to cure for cancer. Secret recipe to managing your diabetes. Secret recipe to all that bothers me a little bit because they're using that secret recipe to sell you something that you need to survive instead of just telling you how to get it. I wish we could take care of each other on that level. I wish we didn't use our desperation as a means of exploitation. I see you need something. What a wonderful opportunity to take something from you. Oh, yes, I'm desperate. Looks like you got problems with that leg there. Yeah, it's just hanging off. I need it sewed back on. I've always admired that Picasso that's hanging in your living room. I'll give you the Picasso if you just throw my leg back on. And the house itself. All right, just throw my leg back on. Oh, I'd be glad to. Thank you. Thank you for your business. Also today, we will be serving. So that's the thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm a soft touch. Maybe I'm stupid. Maybe if I was in charge of things, everything would be gone and used up. We'd all be dead in a month. Probably true. I don't know. But it just seems to me that, you know, these people that do survive the others, you outlive somebody else. It's coming for you, too. So you think maybe you just want to keep that person around to create those moments, those instances, those presence that offset the futility of everything. Our connection to one another will save you. Other than that, you're doomed, and so am I. But you know, right now, we're still being silly. Or Bill Sullivan.
You're not going to say anything.
I do that sometimes. I'll be speaking, and I will suddenly become very self-conscious and realize I'm not saying anything. And then I think, well, you know what? I ought to be honest with people. And I ought to just do what's really happening in my brain. For instance, so I'll be talking and going on about something.
As you know, the consciousness of the
I ought to do that. That'd probably be more entertaining. It's more like music. Speech is music. You expect it to contain something. You expect all speech to contain some meaning. But sometimes it's just music, my friend.
I just listened to Hardy, and I don't know what he said. It sounded like things, and as I was speaking, I was nodding my head.
As the symphony was playing, I was nodding my head. As they were playing the symphony, as they were playing the violins, as they were playing the piano, I was nodding my head in agreement. And when I walked away, all I could do was hum the tune. I didn't know what was said to me specifically. It was a feeling. It was an experience.
Have you experienced, Hardy? Have you?
I want to wash over you, friend. I want to be like a citrus. Oh, that's what I want to be. I want to be like a citrus note, a citrus oily smell in the air. Just a whip, very subtle. I don't want to be strong. You know, anything, too much of anything. Perfume, it's a good smell. It's too much, too much, too much. I'm looking at you, gardenia. But just a subtle orange citrus hint in the air. That's what I want. I think that's what I want to be to you. So you go like that and you go, It's a little, I can't quite describe it. But it's nice. Floral, a little bit. A little bit. There's a stringent quality, a sting to it a little bit, maybe. I don't know. It's wonderfully pleasant. It's confusing, and now it's gone. And I want to be that to you, friend. I hope that, because you're not going to get, you. If you were to, I feel bad. You should be listening to a podcast where if you walk away, you go, I now can name 50 types of evergreen trees or something like that. You say, I walk away, say, I can now name 3 unfairly accused people or something like that. But you have some tangible knowledge, something you can take to a cocktail party. That's the problem. I say, you listen to me, I feel really badly. You walk away and say, what was Hardy's talk about this week? You go, I don't know. Again, I don't know. I don't know. I listen to him. Sometimes it gives me a feeling. I'm with him. I go on a little ride with him. But I don't know where we've been. Because he takes me through the woods. So all I see are trees. And I never quite get my bearings. So I just focus on Hardy and I just look at him. And I just trust him that he's going to drive me somewhere that's fun, that's safe. And maybe he's just driving me around so he can be with me. And that is it. I'm just doing this as an excuse so I can be with you. And don't make the mistake that because, say, you don't know who I am. You're just saying that on the radio. Everybody's listening to it. You don't mean me. I do. If you've been listening this much, and if you've been listening to me for a while, all right, I must apologize, but I'm in your head. We do have a relationship. And when I see you, we're going to know each other a little bit. And that has happened because I've met people that I didn't know who listen to the show, and I meet them, and they know a little about me. And so when we get that out of the way and we can connect much quicker than if I just kind of bumped each other into the street, it's amazing. So, you know, in a way, you know, we do have a relationship, you and I. We do know each other. We are friends. And all I require of you is your well wishes, really. You don't have to do much. I will give you what I have in my heart. I will share with you words strung together. I hope in surprising ways. I won't be able to surprise you. And that will be my gift, and that'll be my part of the relationship. And yours will be to send goodwill to me. You don't have to write me. You don't have to call me. You don't have to do anything but have some love in your heart. And listen to the show, and we will continue to have moments together that hopefully will transcend some of the burden of being alive, that you and I will get to be in an instant together, that will be able to shed or at least ignore some of the pain, the anxiety, and the fear that usually grips us. We'll hope for that. Or, I mean, that's great, because you can also, you can reject me without hurting me. And there's a couple of things. Should you care about hurting me? Probably not. There's probably no reason not to write to me something nasty and say, shut up, shut up, shut up. That's fine. As if you're moved to do so, will it work? Will it hurt me? If you, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yes, it will. Of course it will. The degree, I don't know. Depends. Depends on what I'm doing that day. You know? But you can also just shut me off, do nothing. And then that's wonderful. And then you haven't spread any ill feeling. You don't, you can avoid me and not hurt me. Oh, that's pretty good too. And if we met, that wouldn't be possible. Because I'd start talking and you'd have to reject me to my face. And then if you were the type of person that really didn't want to hurt other people, that'd be tough. But this way, oh, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to a record and something and said, Could I say that to the artist? No. Would I want to? No way. I've said a lot of stuff about me hearing music. Go, oh my gosh, I hate that song. Is that the blah blahs? Yes. If they were standing next to me, it is does not make me a hypocrite to not say it to their face. Because I do, I have no desire to hurt another human being. And as long as that person's music isn't like, you know, killing puppies or something, I don't really, I'm probably not going to tear them down for it. Right? It doesn't give me any pleasure necessarily. Unless I feel jealous of their, that they're succeeding at something that I don't think they deserve to succeed at. And that somehow that's making me feel, I would feel better if they would fail. That's interesting. I wonder if that's true. If you've had a band that you hate, and then that band now is out of favor, or maybe they've gotten a disease or something like that, do you feel better? I wonder if that makes anybody feel better. If they've stopped doing music, you all right now, or does it all need to be burned, the stuff that's already out there? I wonder about that. I'm not saying that I don't reject art or things like that. I just wonder the degree that we need to destroy souls. Just, you know, if you don't have to, is what I'm saying. I can't believe we're together. I hope you can hear the sincere joy in my voice of being able to speak to you in this manner. Because it's bizarre, right? I mean, you've listened to those the professionals do their news things and the people that actually convey information. They don't do it this way, nor would they ever be allowed to. I mean, I have to speak to you this way on a very special station, all right, that is supported by and organized by people who value creative freedom, who value taking chances, who value failure, who value mistakes, who value feeling enthusiasm and surprise, who value surprise over failure. That failure to surprise when you're trying is no failure. Just get up and do it again. That's what we think here at WFMU. It's special, right? I love it. I'm going to get real slow. Listen, I'm just going to mumble at the end and say, but what about your reputation? Who cares? Who cares, right? I got nowhere to go. Where do I go up from? Where is up from a place of absolutely pure, unbridled freedom of expression? Where do you go from there? Where do I go from there? Toilet paper ads? Exactly. I could care less about my reputation. I care about my relationships. That's it. And I care about taking chances. And I care about trying to connect and surprise in unusual ways. and I care about you. You are listening to Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in magical Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org, which is worldwide. I thank you for joining me, and I will see you again next week. Maybe. I mean, but that's the plan.
Along came Jesus. said it to me, and ever since that day, I've been running, telling the world what a wonderful Savior that I found. Now he's been running in my heart, he was clapping in my head.
You say, well, I want to lose in my stomach area. You know, we have a combination of Vim and Vigor would help get that stomach, that gut down. You that wants to lose, ladies, you know where you pick yours up at.
Whoa, Lord, I'm in your care.
Lord, I'm in your care. The Spiritual Five Gospel Singers, the Nashboro record label. Shannon Williams really loved that piano. All those Nashboro records, I don't know. Right before that, the Every Rated Gospel Singers. On the Peacock record label, no piano. Great sounding Peacock records. Wonder if Flannery O'Connor was a fan of the Peacock label. Sinners Crossroads Gospel Broadcast. My name is Kevin Nutt. Thanks for you for tuning in this evening for our gospel program. It's a good one. You can ask me. Sinners Crossroads Gospel Broadcast on listener-supported Freeform WFMU, by the way. And just remember that if you don't tell the truth and you know it, that makes you a liar.